You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 26 June. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Alex Tate from Thimble Wealth. RCO is unbundling Rainbow. It will list effective today. I don't know, is anything in Rainbow? Chickens, Astral? It just seems so cyclical to me. Andrea Ellens, retail industry specialist from Trade Intelligence. The growth in the forecourt retail space. It's no longer dodgy pies. It's got all fancy. And then Waldo Marcus from TPN Credit Bureau. Trends in the residential rental market. I'm interested around that. With rates high, are we buying less properties and therefore perhaps renting more? The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. Households increasingly opting to have just one vehicle. Consumers expected to remain cautious despite slowdown in new and used vehicle price inflation. Business Day, SA loses 67,000 jobs in the first quarter. Trade, business services and mining among the sectors that shed jobs. Morning markets. US was green. S&P up 0.4%. NASDAQ up 1.2%. Over in the east, it is green. Sydney's up 0.3%. Sorry, mostly green. Sydney up 0.3%. Tokyo 1.4%. Hong Kong up a point, literally, and Tencent off a percent. Commodities, red. Gold, $2,332 an ounce. Brent, $85.32. Platinum, $1,005. Palladium, $938. Rand, $18.22. Bitcoin, $61,950. And top 40, looking for a red open, about 115 points or 0.15% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Talking now with Alex Dace from Thimble Wealth. Alex, appreciate the early morning. As I said there in the intro, RCO Foods unbundling their Rainbow. It's technically a chicken business. It used to be on the market way back in the day as Rainbow Chickens. It now joins Astral as the, you know, Astral's the big chicken producer. I mean, your take on Rainbow specifically, I mean, and the chicken sector generally, as I said in the intro there, volatile in large part because input costs and more recently, avian influenza as well.
Yes, good morning, Simon. I think firstly, it's good to have another listing on the market, even though it's a relatively small one and, as we can discuss, quite challenging to assess. But, you know, if you look at Rainbow Chicken, you know, over the last few years, it's really had a torrid time. Combination of internal issues, specifically on the breed performance, being very, very troublematic there. And as you alluded to, some of the external issues with high input cost pressures, load shedding, COVID, avian flu, etc. So the new management team has been introduced about 3 years ago, and they're trying to really work on efficiencies and so forth. So the idea with Rainbow now coming to the market is that the balance sheet is relatively in good state. Of course, RCL makes sure that the balance sheet is quite strong. Mm-hmm. They've also done a lot of the capex already. So now it's about giving Rainbow Chicken time to look to execute on the strategy, see if they can actually get those margins higher, get some volume growth through, which improves efficiencies, and then, you know, drive earnings growth from the space, which is obviously very, very low at the moment. But I'm sure it will not go up in a straight line. You know, because even with Astral, where they've got the best management team in the poultry sector, they also got very high volatility in the earnings just due to market factors, and some of these factors you simply are resigned to, you can't do anything about it. They either go massively against you or in your favor. So, you know, let's see how Rainbow Chicken performs, but it will be a function predominantly of market dynamics and to some extent the turnaround plan that they're trying to implement.
I take your point, and I'm looking at the Astral chart. It's 100, let's call it 161 Rand, which is pretty much what it was 5 years ago. In that period, it has twice been up at 220. It's been down at sub 120, 130 a couple of times. These really are, you need to get your timing right in them, because this is not a bottom draw sort of stock you put in your portfolio. This you need to get at the right time and then take the profits, because that volatility is extreme.
Yes, agreed. I think also, to be fair, a lot of African 100% South African businesses has been trading at 10 or 20 year lows. just because of where the economy has gone. But regarding chicken poultry, yes, it is one that you're trying to buy at a trough when margins are quite low. You don't want to buy this at peak margins. And then you pretty much, even though hope is not a strategy, you didn't really need them to have a better cycle going forward so they can have higher margins, because you can make a lot of money if you do time it right. But I agree, this is not a buy and hold company, as Astral's and the share price would suggest, but it's one that you more perhaps have a shorter time horizon, you know, call it 12 to 36 months perhaps, and see if you can potentially try to foresee changes coming before it happens.
Yeah, I take your point. And I mean, absolutely, in the case here, and if you've called it right on Astral, you've gone from, you know, 120 to 220 in 18 months. Not bad at all. Alex Dace and Thimble Wolf, appreciate the time today. And that's our question on LinkedIn and Twitter. We also had the psilocybin listing yesterday. These new listings, are you interested in either of them? Perhaps both of them? Some chicken, some cannabis stocks, or perhaps it is neither. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter.
There's no postponing the inevitable. Your money knew this day would come. And you know what? It can hardly wait to start giving some back to you. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Andrea Ellens, retail industry specialist at Trade Intelligence. Andrea, appreciate the time today. Forecourt retail. I mean, if I go back, okay, probably a long time, into the 90s, forecourts, I mean, you could get a dodgy pie and a packet of cigarettes, maybe a liter of milk. It wasn't a good experience. It's fundamentally different these days.
Absolutely. I mean, forecourt retail has shifted so incredibly. I mean, now go to a forecourt for a great cup of coffee. You can still get your pie, but you can get a ready meal, a pizza, a cake, and a magazine. And now you can get Woolworths, which obviously has been around for a long time. But, you know, forecourt's food retailing has definitely increased and is now a big contributor to the forecourt revenue.
Yeah, and a recent report you guys did, and it came out in saying quite simply that we're actually seeing fuel sales decline, which means, I imagine, less people actually putting fuel in their car. But we're seeing foot traffic and sales at these retail outlets at the forecourts actually increasing.
Yeah, so I mean, I think for me, one of the most staggering stats that we got from Lightstone actually is the average number of times someone visits a forecourt, which is gobsmacking. So the average number of times a person visits a forecourt is 10 times a month.
Wow.
And that's not to fill up with fuel. That's to do a variety of other things. And that could be to draw cash. That could be buy a cup of coffee. That could be to get that bread and milk that they've need to get on their way home. And it could obviously be to buy fuel. And it means that that petrol forecourt ecosystem is really crucial to that South African that does, you know, gets a whole lot of services from a forecourt.
It is that convenience. I mean, as I'm thinking on it, there's one or two that I drive home from the studio every day. And if I just need something quick, it's so much easier than trying to go into a Woolies or a shopping center. There's parking available. As you say, there's lots of product that I can do. It's not just, you know, food and the like. It's also just cash. It can be a coffee. It's convenience almost on steroids.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think that's what's so interesting about the forecourts, because, you know, you talked about fuel and forecourts. You know, over the last sort of 5 years, we've seen a decrease in fuel sales of sort of in the minus 7.6%. Mm-hmm. And we just haven't recovered post-COVID. And that's kind of for a number of reasons. One is obviously, you know, a lot of us are working from home. You know, people have definitely gone back to the office this year. So, you know, there's an increase on fuel, but not 100%. Plus, you know, we've had this kind of very, very tricky, sticky, ugly economic reality with food inflation and all sorts of things. So we're not spending as much money on fuel. The price of fuel has gone up. We are sharing costs or taking public transport or using the likes of the e-hailing services, whether it's Uber or any one of those, to save on fuel. So the forecourt owners have to kind of get their income from a variety of other sources, whether it's fast food or forecourts or coffee or any other services that they're offering.
I imagine the fast food is also quite a big attraction. We were talking about a pie, but of course you can get pizzas these days, you can get burgers, all sorts. And again, it's the convenience and the ease of that process. I might not be needing my daily staples, but I can go and grab a quick meal. And I think what's important here as well is its quality. If we go back to that dodgy pie of the 90s, those don't exist anymore. We can get good pies.
Absolutely. So from the shopper research that Trade Intelligence conducted with consumers or shoppers at forecourts, 68% of forecourt shoppers buy a takeaway from a forecourt. So that's a huge percentage. And then we asked the shopper, you know, who do they buy from and who do they prefer to buy from? Mm-hmm. And Chicken Licken was ranked the best forecourt quick service restaurant. Mm-hmm. And then after that, Debonairs and Steers. So, you know, you talked about the quality and the brands and the partnerships that these forecourts have gone into. And we're seeing such great quality and brand link-ups at these forecourts.
Are we still seeing growth in terms of actual number of locations? I mean, I'm thinking around where I live, and let's be clear, you know, I'm in Rosebank, so it's probably not a fair representative example, but they've all got the forecourts. Are there still growth? Do we still see new ones popping up, retail spaces?
Yes. So just to be clear, so in South Africa, we have sort of 4,600 forecourts, but not all of them have convenience stores at them. So of those 4,600 stores, 3,000 of those have forecourts. And from 2022 to 2023, we saw an 8.5% increase in turnover. So 33 billion rand is kind of going through our forecourts. So that is kind of massive. So, and if you compare that to 2019, we had 26 billion rand going through the forecourts. So, you know, there's still growth to be had, and we're still at Trade Intelligence forecasting further growth in convenience at forecourts.
This is a whole little subsector of FMCG and QSR, which I think we're all aware of because we use it. The numbers are staggering. I was unaware just how big. We leave it there. It's Andrea Ellens, retail industry specialist at Trade Intelligence. Appreciate the time.
When you stay invested over time in Stanlib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money's in for some smooth sailing. With our global partners, JP Morgan Asset Management, at the helm, your money can withstand the pressure and bad weather day-to-day market conditions cause. All aboard? Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting with Walter Marcus, industry principal at TPN Credit Bureau. Walter, great to have you on the show again. Chatting the rental market, I suppose not a big surprise that we're seeing a fair bit of demand for the market. What are your stats telling you in terms of vacancies and availabilities?
Thank you very much for having me on your show. The residential vacancy rate has decreased from quarter four of last year into quarter one of this year. We've seen a drop to show that we've actually had the lowest vacancy in the residential market since we started recording this behavior in 2016. And to give you an idea, during the first quarter of 2016, the vacancies were sitting at 7.52%. At the beginning of this year, it dropped to 4.42%, and that came down from a 6.69% in the previous quarter. The number of vacant units in the residential market that's standing vacant is on the decrease, and there's various factors that play a reason why that is happening.
I want to touch on some of those factors. I mean, the big one, I imagine, is interest rates. The prime at, 11.75? Buying a house is expensive, so renting becomes an easier option, I imagine.
Very true. I think the first consideration that we look at is affordability, and that's why people opt to rent rather than to purchase. But beyond interest rates, there's other factors that also play a major role, and that includes rates and taxes, which we've seen continuing to increase the past couple of years. You've got transfer duties that's increased, and repairs and maintenance, those costs have also been substantial and increased well above inflation. And all those costs need to be considered when you're purchasing a home, while when you are renting, those costs are usually absorbed or factored into the rental and is covered by the land or the property investor. And that then plays a big part in predictability. And we've seen in the past couple of years with the higher interest rates and these other costs coming through at a much higher rate, we've seen that predictability has become very important for consumers in South Africa and households. And with a set lease, be it 6, 12, or even a longer period of lease term, it gives a better predictability around how you manage your budget within a household.
I take that point. I hadn't thought of that. I mean, rates, of course. So the interest rate, but it is all the rest. And it is, you make a great point around it, which is a predictability around it. Could this, and I mean, we're moving into the realm of, I suppose, predicting more than anything here. But in a sense, this says that maybe even as rates come down, we might not see as quick a move away from rental because of that predictability, because of those other costs. I rent. My rent is the same every single month. Rates and taxes, that's a whole different story.
That's very true. And you know, once the interest rates come down, you also need to consider that the market and the reasons why people rent. And we published a tenant survey results a couple of weeks ago. And there we asked why people rent. And the ability and the flexibility to move when it's required, depending on your socioeconomic situation. There's also an uptick in the number of people that believe that renting is cheaper than buying, or I don't want to incur debt. Mm. And those factors plays a big role in decision making. And like you said, your rental every month is the same, so it's easier for you to budget. And although in some residential lease agreements, you do pay for your own utilities, but then again, there's more control over that if you want to do prepaid. And again, more and more people are saying that they want to have more control. Therefore, prepaid meters and rental properties is very important. And landlords have listened and reacted to that and providing tenants with these kind of services, which is also a big role player in why we see the continual great performance with the residential rental assets.
Yeah, I take your point. Absolutely. Are we seeing different sort of levels of demand markedly across different price points? Did you ask around, did your survey sort of cover that? And I'm thinking particularly perhaps lower LSM versus higher, or lower rental cost rather than higher.
We also look at the various rental value bands. And those paying rental less than 3,000 rand a month, that vacancies have halved from quarter four of last year to this year.
Wow.
And we've also seen an uptake in the demand within those rental units. So we've seen that in the past, that those paying less than 3,000 from a vacancy perspective, that rental value band struggled a little bit. But coming into this year, it's had a very good and a very strong performance. Those paying between 3,000 and 4,500, again, we've also seen a reduction in the number of vacant units in that market. Those paying between 4 and 7, they have reduced to below the 6% mark. Very interestingly, the 7,000 to 12,000, or what we say within the upper rental value bands, they have also dropped it to below the 6%. The luxury market, those rental units that achieve a 12,000 to 25,000 rand a month rental, that is the best performing when it comes to the number of vacancies. And during the peak of the pandemic and when interest rates were the lowest, we've seen the inverse take place. And we've seen that there were higher vacancies in those luxury rental value bands. And that has come down. And I think it speaks again to the reasons why people rent. They can afford to purchase a home. They have the ability to approach financial institutions to acquire a bond, but they opt for rental still. And that segment of the market has performed very well when it comes to occupying rental properties.
Okay. A last question. Geographically, the novice in me is going to say probably we have the lowest vacancy rate in the Western Cape. Does that bear out?
You're 100% right. The Western Cape has again maintained its position with the lowest vacancies in the country. It's got a vacancy rate of 1.5%.
Wow.
So that is very, very low. And during last year, we've seen the vacancy sitting at 3.18 in the last quarter. At the peak of the pandemic, the Western Cape, however, was at 14.38%. So as we saw less people being able to move, and we saw also tourism being impacted, business travel being impacted, the Western Cape had vacancies, but it's recovered really, really well. On the back of that, they've also got an extremely strong demand rating. So there is a demand for rental properties. And although supply is still strong in that province, there's not enough supply to keep up with the demand in the Western Cape.
Yeah, and that's many things. It's the Western Cape, it's some immigration and the like. We'll leave it there. Walter Marcus, Industry Principal, TPN Credit Bureau. Appreciate the time today. That's it for today. We were chatting with Chantal Marx yesterday, talking around the NASPAS results. Profits doubled, but there was a lot of moving parts there. She said yes, agreed with that, but that, for example, food delivery was actually starting to get to break even, as was classified. So we asked if you were impressed by the results. It was evenly split between a third of you saying, yep, great results, another third saying, no, there wasn't much operational profits, and the rest saying, one trick pony. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and a review in your podcatcher of choice. And we'll chat again tomorrow. Confercations, what are they?
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.